Hello, everybody, and welcome to Bad End, episode 68. It's a special episode this week because Katie is across the seas, I believe. She's at a big games conference. Wait, is it in California?
I don't know. Where is it?
Anyways,
she's at DICE.
We'll probably hear more from her next week or next episode about that. So this week, we have just the two co-hosts, me, Kyle Cookstell, and forever Josh Calixto joining us today for the podcast. And we got to listen. We ask for questions a lot. We're trying to figure out how to better ask for questions. But for this episode, we gathered a lot of the stuff we've been getting over the past like month or two to talk about questions, also talk about some games. And then the back half of the episode,
we got a big old bulging abscess full of questions just waiting to be popped. You know what I'm saying?
That's disgusting.
Coming up in the episode, we got a new little segment we're going to try out. And so we want you to stick around for that because it's going to be a lot of fun, I think. Kyle just tossed it at me before the show and I was like cracking up. So we're going to try out a little something new here later on. But we got a lot of questions, reader mail.
And so we're going to do some reader mail, we're going to do some game talk, and then second half, we're going to get a little weird.
It's been a minute since we got weird, but it's like...
It's been a minute since we got weird.
We usually do boys' time, men's time with Katie's gone, but we're, you know, that's of the past. If you want to listen to those episodes, they're there, they're in the hopper. Go listen to those, they're fun. Or you can just listen to an episode with Katie, because those are also fun. But I do want to talk some games, because I've been gaming.
Dude, I've been gaming too.
Okay, so I don't know if I would consider this gaming because it's an indie game, but
wow. All games matter, Josh.
Yeah, it's true. I played fucking Ori and the Blind Forest, man.
Man, this is such a great intro to stuff up something I want to talk about. So go ahead, let me hear your spiel.
What do you know about Ori?
I mean, I don't know what. I think I want to hear what you want to say because I have a lot of thoughts about Ori.
First of all, did you know that Ori is not the fat thing?
Yes.
I did not know that. They pulled like a fucking Metal Gear Solid 2 Raiden on me. And I'm like controlling this little fucking... I want to say about this game, it's a hardcore platformer with an indie like art style. Basically,
it like came out like peak like AAA studios making indie looking games.
Yeah, it was like Ori and Yarny were hand in hand going like, we're gonna make the gamers cry, but just giving fucking Mario, basically, you know.
Man, also small like diatribe off this is like, I'm so fucking sick of this indie character stereotype, which is the like kind of white blob with black eyes. Because you got it with Ori, you got it with Fez, you got it with Hollow Knight, you got it with it's kind of like the inverse in Limbo, but it's this sort of like stereotypical character that I feel like so many games have is like, oh, the Forager character, same thing.
All the World of Goo, that developer's stuff is like,
just
it's
like
black.
White blob character with like small black eyes is such an overdone character type now that it feels lazy. Every time I see it, I'm like, fuck off. I don't even want to touch this thing. So anyways.
And it's like,
Ori.
It's funny because when I think of the critical ecosystem, at the time was like quite a bit bigger, and I think a lot more indie developers were getting like the kind of, I think they had to respond to that kind of thing a little bit more. Not that they're making games, you know, to appease critics, but I do think there's a lot of like bulletproofing type shit where they're trying to like make their games critique proof, like, oh yeah, it's a sad story about a cute character, how can you not like that? But it's like, I feel like this has gone down a bit in the past couple years. Maybe I feel like there's been a little bit less of the mascotting type stuff. Maybe I'm wrong here. Maybe I'm off base.
Well, no, because I feel like I don't think so. Because I mean, I think you might be wrong. Because I think about like Little Nightmares is very much that. There's like,
that was like
other
almost
games.
3 years ago at this point.
Yeah, but I mean like, wait, Little Nightmares or
yeah.
Ori.
The yeah,
but I feel like I'm trying to think of other stuff since then. Like you, what was the one like where it was like about like depression and sadness again? But you were like in a boat on water.
You have not eliminated a single game.
That's the one. No, it was the one. I think it won our like most indie bullshit award. It was like Sea of Sorrow or something.
Oh, I don't know.
Just, yeah, it's just I feel like it's been a thing. The sort of style of game where it's like it's like a platform, but it's sad. So.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Ori and the Blind Forest, it's one of those games that you turn off your brain and you play it and it's fine, but there's a lot of shit in that game that's really freaking annoying and frustrating. That I'm like, why did this have to be like this art style, this like indie thing? Oh, it was also it's also one of those like it's folklore-ish. It has that whole vibe to it. That was really big at the time, where it was like based on, you know, ideas lifted from Swedish folklore, Nordic mythology, you know, stuff.
It's like
that.
The Hyperlight Drifter-esque thing that kind of got like subsumed into this general indie aesthetic, where it's like mysterious runes and like ancient people and like a lot of pink and purple.
Yeah, there's a lot of mysterious runes. But dude, the game, it's so gamery, man. It's like,
yeah,
it's 100%. A gamer game. It's a total gamer game. There's like upgrades to your stats and or abilities. There's a lot of really fucking precise platforming in this game. So much of it is so fucking unforgiving. It's like, I'm like, why? Why are you doing this to me? It's fucking annoying, man. And there's these parts where you do these like basically dungeons. And you have to jump, it's auto scroller shit, but a lot of the auto scroller shit is stuff where you have to like die to a thing like three times to figure out what you even have to do, you know? So like you're just going through this auto scroller, you pass like this part through improvisation, and then you die to something that you're like, it looks impossible to pass. So you have to get there like four times in a row, then figure out, oh, I have to like stand in this one safe spot that doesn't look like it was even there. And then, but then you've wasted so much time because you have to go through the level every single time just to get back to that spot. Then you pass it and the same thing happens until finally you fucking beat the level. It's so annoying and gamery and in a bad way. And then, the story stuff is like peak tugging at your heartstrings shit, where it's like, oh, the little baby died. The little baby creature fucking died. And they're all sad.
You gotta save it. There's like a bunch of stuff. Yeah.
And it's just like these cute characters that there's so many like little spoiler alert sort of for this game, but there's like, you know, this bad creature that turned out, oh, they were good all along, they were just scared. And then like the main villain is like, oh, she was trying to protect her babies. Like, this is literally the type of shit where when you're playing pretend as a kid, that's like the plot lines you come up with, you know? Like, she was never a bad guy, she was just trying to protect her kids.
It's like a true both sides argument kind of going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, oh, we don't, this world is pure. There's no actual bad guys. There's just people who have like motivations that are, you know, they've been through some shit, you know?
Yeah.
Which, you know, fine. It is what it is, but I was not, the story beats were hitting and I was just like, okay, you did this. You really did this, huh? Just nothing surprising in this game, nothing particularly poignant to me. A lot of stuff felt kind of emotionally manipulative, but the platforming is smooth. Yeah, that's about it. That's Ori.
I'm making notes over here. I think like one thing I have also Rain World, another white character,
oh,
black
Bob,
eyes.
Black eyes, yeah.
Yo, shout out to Rain World, fucking rips, but I mean, come on. It's got the indie character. Yeah. It's a thing. One thing about Ori that also, like, kind of to what you're saying, it's this very like tough as nails platformer. But I think that this art style works against that, because the art style is not like precise. It's sort of this like painterly like texture thing. So it can be actually hard sometimes to discern like where surfaces start and stop.
Did you play it?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, there's a lot of foreground background issues where you're like, I need to know what is a platform and what is part of the fucking background here, because that's very unclear. There's a lot of readability issues in that game.
Yeah, and I think like about something like, you know, Super Meat Boy, that is a tough as nails platformer, which is definitely the genre name for this. And it's like super precise, right? It's like the whole, it is totally obvious what will kill you and what is safe in that game. And I feel like playing something like Ori, you have that experience that you're talking about where it takes you three times of doing something just to even discern, like, you know, when the screen is scrolling and it's fucking bright and bloomy as fuck, you're like, oh, what is actually able to be grabbed onto? What can I actually touch? And you have to kind of like actually die a few times before that stuff is visible, which just like over time breeds frustration. Like, I even think of something like, I wasn't a huge fan of Celeste, but that game has like, the readability is great. Like, it's super obvious, like what you can do, like kind of moment to moment. And that's what makes you even like have the ability to do some of these really hard levels kind of quickly on your first try. Whereas Ori, like so much of playing, it felt like, okay, like I changed zones now. So what like weird purple tinted blue thing is what I can touch and what I can't touch.
That's good shit. That I totally agree. Totally agree.
Yeah.
Another thing that pissed me off is that like, they give you like life and mana orbs where it's like, first you have like three health so you can take like three hits or whatever. And then you slowly start upgrading your health bar to the point where you have like 12 orbs or some shit. So you're like, oh, I can take 12 hits now. But then everything just does half to two thirds of your health. So you die in two hits anyway. Some shit kills you in one hit. So it's like, why are you implementing this system? If just make it where you fucking die in one hit. Mario had it right, you know. You get a mushroom and then when you lose it,
Mario did it right.
It's just like the health bar is just stupid.
Yeah, it's like perfunctory.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. They're just trying to add systems for the sake of doing it. There's really nothing that the health orb system adds to the gameplay whatsoever, in my opinion.
I mean, something kind of similar is like the sort of, like you're saying, you can die kind of really quickly and the health doesn't matter. I think that's another thing that I found with Ori that kind of separates it in a not great way from some of these other like really tough platformers, which is the sort of like in something like Celeste, you know, there's definitely like, if you time everything just right, there's an amazing critical path you can take through a level where like you feel like a god. And then there's other ways to get through the level that aren't that. And I feel like with Ori, it so often veers instead towards that first option where it's like, do it right or not at all.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of like in between, especially because a lot of the mechanics have to do with you like lingering in air a lot. So it's not like there's ever time to rest. It's like, oh, if your energy runs out when you're trying to like bounce to another platform and you miss it, like you start over. It's never like any sort of intermediary.
Yeah, this game doesn't have that sense of flow to me. There's a lot. It's like puzzly in that like, you're trying to figure out what to do on a specific screen, or you're trying to like execute correctly or do the combat right. Which, by the way, combat and platformers, never that great, really. But I think it just lacks that sense of flow. But not to talk shit about Ori for 20 minutes, because there is some cool stuff about the game. I think some of the movement itself feels pretty nice. Like the act of controlling Ori.
Yeah, the character feels good.
It's like, I feel like a lot of platformers veer too much toward the slippery, floaty side of things, but there's like a nice gravity to Ori. The double jump is nice, stuff like that. If we're going under the hood and talking like the featurey shit, that's where it's like, okay, acceptable. But like, I heard about this game because someone tweeted like restarting one of the most beautiful games ever made, blah, blah, blah. And it was like a screenshot and like it looked pretty nice. Not like one of the most beautiful screenshots I've ever seen, but I was like, oh, that's I guess that's Ori in the Blind Forest. And then I was like, oh, I think it's on Game Pass. I'll just download it right now. I ain't got better shit to do. So I started playing it and I was just like, it looks good, but I don't know. It's Man, not like
I can't wait. Can we move on? Because I got a great dovetail.
Yeah, but real segue. Quick, can you remember the Swapper?
Yeah.
That's a fucking great game right there. The Swapper. Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
All right. So I think like it's so interesting that you're talking about Ori at all, but I think that the sort of word that's circling in my mind that's also circling some other stuff I wanted to talk about is the word like perfunctory, where the game kind of exists and it doesn't feel like it's necessarily advocating for itself to be a thing that needs to happen. So in a way, like it feels perfunctory in the sense where it's like, oh, yep, that's the game. It's there it is doing its thing. And I guess that's fine. And I played another game, actually maybe two games I would describe as perfunctory. And one is that I played Scourgebringer. Have you seen this?
No, never heard of it.
So it's another like really never heard of it. It's like a really pretty roguelike. Wait, stop me if you heard this before. Tough as nails roguelike platformer.
Oh.
Inspired by Dead Cells and Celeste.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, and so, Celeste.
And Celeste.
That makes Dead Cells and Celeste influential games.
It does. They even, I think, on Steam, if you have Dead Cells in your library, they like give you a 10% off discount, which feels really thirsty, but you know your audience. But okay. The thing is, like, I played this game, and it's like, I don't fucking care. It's like it's beautiful. It feels good. It's got like the roguelike thing. You die and you go talk to some weird spirit, and you get like skills in a persistent skill tree. How do you feel about opening a chest and picking one of three items, Josh? Because this game's got it,
dude. This is like the gamer Mad Lib, which is
game it feels like
plus game in X art style.
That's, but it's like game plus literally nothing else. Like it just feels like these other two games come together.
I'm assuming Scourgebringer implies some kind of metal or dark.
No, it's like some part of their lore, but it's not like any sort of metal thing. It's same sort of like neon pixels, like sticky surfaces.
But
and it's like I don't care. Like I'm playing this. It's a kind of game like that burns me out on playing games. Because like it's the sort of thing where you're like, oh, I've already played this. I've already played all the stuff this is talking about, and this is like not even trying to do something different.
Dude, it's because people fucking start. This is my opinion. Okay.
Let me hear it.
People start from the wrong place in video games all the time, which is like, we want to make a video game that plays like just like this other thing, but with like a different feature. Like, what if we made X game? You know what I'm saying? Where it's like they start from what they want their game to feel like, which often lifts directly from something else. But then they're like, then everything else is perfunctory, where it's like, oh, well, we have to have an art style. Well, we don't want it to look too much like that thing. So let's make it a Viking theme.
Slightly different.
Let's do a Nordic mythology theme. Let's do a hardcore violent metal theme. Let's do a cutesy fucking blob white blob black eyes theme. And they just run with that shit. And then all of a sudden you've got a fucking Steam top 10 seller, because it turns out people just wanted to play another platformer that felt like exactly like the other one, but like slightly better or slightly different in one or two ways, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is super real. And like, I've seen a lot of like good press about this thing. And I think like totally aside, the game is like functionally great, right? It's like, looks great, sounds great, feels great, has a great core loop. Like it's doing all this stuff right. But it's the sort of thing where it's like, if I wanted to do all these other things, I've already done them. Like, I'm not looking to just do that same stuff again. Like, if I want to play Dead Cells, I'm going to go play Dead Cells. If I want to play Celeste, I'm just going to play Celeste. Like, no part of me is wishing for some sort of merger of these two ideas. And that's kind of where this perfunctory thing comes in, where, because it's like, yeah, it exists. Like, it's almost like video games dreaming of themselves. It's the sort of, obviously someone will make this thing because these things are similar, such that it's like we're approaching a point where just every game feels like it is being made in some way by someone. And this, and I think, like, in a real way, like, this game is doing well, right? Like, it's on Xbox Game Pass already as an early access launch title, which is crazy. It's on Steam early access. So clearly, like, people have interest in this sort of thing. I don't want to discount that. But what I want to point to is the fact that it feels perfunctory. It feels like, why this game? Why now? Why would I want to play this when I can just play these other things? And that's what's hard about this, is I'm not finding a compelling reason to, like, keep playing it in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it feels perfunctory because it is, you know?
I mean, there's another side to it, too, which I think is, like, maybe I'm also looking at it from a consumer. I think this is the type of thing that actually does really well with, like, streamers. Because, you know, who doesn't want to watch someone play Celeste? It's like the person who's already watched their favorite streamer play Celeste. But their favorite streamer is, like, really good at doing, like, hard platformer type Dead Cells-y stuff. So it's like, well, here's a new game that you can play that's not the same thing people have been looking at for 5 years.
Yeah.
And, like, that makes sense.
And I mean, to be honest with you, like, as a person who ends up playing a good amount of these kinds of games, it's like you have to... I feel like it could be interpreted that we just talk shit about any game that's not, like, doing something radically different or whatever. But it's like, I think it's like, you got to take the good with the bad, right? Like, you got to acknowledge that there's nothing, like, original going on in this shit. And I'm not saying it's not okay to not enjoy it. Like, that's one thing that a lot of people do, where they're like, let people enjoy things. It's like, you can enjoy this shit. I enjoy this shit. I played Ori and the Blind Forest. I fucking beat that shit in a couple days. But you can also, like, look at it and be like, okay, maybe we could be doing more. Maybe there could be more coming out. Maybe, why is this happening? And that's, like, what we're doing, is, like, we're taking a step back, trying to see what's going on, what's good about it, what's bad about it. And so, yeah, while I think that it's not always a bad thing for games like Ori, games like whatever that game was that you were just talking about, Scourgebringer, and all these games to be coming out, it's like, do we need the amount coming out that are coming out? What?
Yeah.
Like, do we need this volume of this shit? Do we really need 100 platformers with white blobs? it's do something goopy different. White blobs. Like, just try something. I don't know, man.
I have a follow up to this conversation that I'm interested to hear your opinion on.
Sure, but I also want to get to DBZ.
Kakarot, oh yeah, I want to talk about this before we talk about DBZ.
Yes, I just, because just putting that down.
A lot of what we're talking about Scourgebringer, I also sort of feel about Slay the Spire, which I finally played, and I played it a lot since the last podcast recording. And I kind of want to hear your thoughts around that, because I know you're a big Slay the Spire fan, and even on this podcast, you've been like, Kyle, play it, play it, play it, play it. And I finally played it, and I do keep playing it. And it feels like the same. I think it doesn't feel as perfunctory as other stuff, but it feels just like pure gameplay in kind of a similar way, where it's like the art style is, like, not great. I'm glad there's not some, like, ham-fisted story that's, like, stuck on top of it.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of the sort of beats of, like, the sort of, like, something like Ori, where it's like, you did it and you did it really well, but there's not a lot else there. For some reason in Slay the Spire, I care less about that. And, like, I've been playing Slay the Spire, like, almost every day for the past week or so. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm enjoying it. It's fun. But also I do it and I'm like, this feels hollow. It feels like I want more out of this thing than it's actually giving me, but I keep coming back to it.
I think I had this issue when I played Slay the Spire too. And I did actually think about it quite a bit, but, first off, I think it's a pretty creative game. I think, like, it's doing something different than a lot of other roguelikes in the card system that creates a lot of different stuff. Like, and I don't really know games that do what Slay the Spire did, that preceded Slay the Spire.
I mean, I think the biggest one was Card Dungeon, which was like a web game for, but it was by Blue Manchu.
Yeah, but Card Dungeon was not, it wasn't the,
I mean, it wasn't the gameplay structured was totally like different. This.
It was, yeah, it was a card based game that had roguelike elements, but the execution is, and systems were entirely different. And I did play a lot of Card Dungeon, for the record. But I think that Slay the Spire does this really cool thing where it makes, and I've said this on this podcast before, which is that it makes the combat feel tactile. Like, there's a lot of speed with which you can do your actions. Everything feels super responsive in a way that most card games do not feel. It might be like the most responsive feeling card game I've ever played. Like, when you use one of your little one mana slashes or whatever, and it almost feels like you're playing an action game at times. Like, that is really fucking cool. And one of the things that feels really great about Slay the Spire that I really like about that game. But when it comes to that hollow feeling, Kyle, I think you have to take a step back sometimes and look at like the process of playing a game, the act of playing a game, the journey, not the destination type thing.
the spire, traveling on the spire.
Yeah. The spire, not the sleigh. You know, but I think that's what's fun about the game is like building your deck, putting together something like insane and just like breezing through everything and then like killing the last boss and just doing it, racking up an insane amount of damage because your deck is just nuts. And it's like solitaire almost, you know what I'm saying? Like the most intricate form of solitaire you've ever played. But when you do get there, like it feels good. Cause you know, and sometimes it's really just about like enjoying this deck you've put together. It's like building a car or building, just putting something together and then like test driving it and just like playing with it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm more surprised in my reaction to it because I think like, I have, you know, semi-famously on this podcast said that people don't care about well-designed games. And this game just feels totally counter to that because it's like all this game is. It is just something that like feels good to play. And the system is like super tight. Like it's so hard to find literally anything to complain about in terms of like all this, the systems that the game is working with. And also like beyond that, it feels like they do such a good job of like exploring what is in hand to explore with the system without having to introduce something else on top of it. It's like there's cards and there's basically status effects and there's like whatever you would call the fact that you can see what an enemy is going to do. And like with those three things, they do everything.
Yeah.
And like I've unlocked like two other characters, I think. And I've only still played with like the first one.
The
because
warrior.
I feel like there's so much still. It's like so much to explore in that one person. It's like, oh, what if I got this relic and this thing? And it's just so interesting because it feels like such a different model of gameplay that either like I've lost touch with or like haven't had in a while. And I think it's a sort of gameplay model that I feel like kind of burned me out on video games like 5 or 10 years ago where I was just like, I was just tired of just playing stuff that just felt like gameplay. And then like Dark Souls came out and that kind of changed things. But It smells so much like that thing, like an Ori, like a sort of thing that's like, that's a game, being a game over here. That's all you got. And something about it now is like, I'm finding myself really compelled to play it. So I'm bringing it up as like kind of a counterexample to what I was saying about Ori to say that like, I feel all these same things, but at the same time, I'm like enjoying this. I'm trying to like understand why, like what is the thing here that's kind of keeping me.
I think it's good at being a game. And I think it's good at being a game that you don't feel like you've played 100 times before. And yeah. I think it's like the built-in roguelike thing where it's good at being a game where you don't have the same experience every time you rerun it, even if you are going with similar elements. And I think cards and roguelikes are really well suited to each other because that sense of like recombining different ingredients into your recipe and then like seeing what happens with it and trying to overcome these little like hurdles that they're putting in front of you is such like a great thing suited to cards. And I just think they do it really, really well.
I think
It's hard to elevate Slay the Spire above that, but it does all that shit really well.
I mean, I also think a thing for me that's kind of related is that, like we talked about last episode, we've both been playing like a lot of Magic / Runeterra, and you brought up a point that was like, it's like an obvious thing, but I wasn't really thinking about it, which is that like playing Magic, you're playing against someone else. So in a lot of ways, like Magic has to account for people's decks not becoming broken. So much of Magic is like, you have this cool combo often, or like some sort of set of combos that you're trying to get to win, but you're also reckoning with what the other person has. And because that other person is a person, they can't like cheat, or you can't really cheat in a way that like makes that be a fun experience. Because if two people are playing Magic and one person has a deck that's totally broken, that's a bad experience for the other person. And that's like a bad design overall. And you're like, oh, like Slay the Spire is not really about beating the game. It's just about like creating a cool deck combo. And like kind of reframing my knowledge around that to be like, oh yeah, like this is a single player game.
Yeah.
And like, it doesn't have to worry about, I mean, it does in some senses, but for a lot of, like, you could basically have a deck that feels totally broken, plus like, you know, rune combos or whatever, or trinkets or whatever they're called. And that's like fine. That's like exists inside the system, and in some ways it incentivizes that. So in some ways, I think my interest in Slay the Spire is the fact that I can like fucking steamroll opponents with like no recourse. Unlike when I'm playing Magic and I have to like get beat down by someone else's deck.
One of the craziest things in that game is when you build a deck that's like insanely OP and you get to a boss whose ability like directly counters it. Like they do that where the boss has like one specific mechanic where it screws you over. So like sometimes you'll have a lot of like zero mana deal 10 damage cards in your deck, and you're just, and you have like cards that cycle them so that you can just constantly be doing like 100 damage and play 30 your entire deck in one turn and just kill any enemy. And then you get to this boss that's like, whenever you use an attack against them, it does like 10 damage back to you. And like the more attacks you use, that number ramps up. So your entire deck just doesn't work against this boss. And it's like, you know, you come up against that boss, you're like, well, this totally counters my deck. But then for the next time, you know that boss exists, so you can try to like tech in some cards that would help you address that or whatever, or you can just like press your luck. But those feelings too of like the game being able to surprise you with these bosses and mechanics that directly break your broken thing is like one of the cool things about Slay the Spire. But then sometimes you have a deck that just would overcome anything that the computer throws at it.
Yeah.
And then the fun is like on the final boss, seeing how much damage you can do to the heart or whatever. And that's a lot of fun. But yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you about pretty much all that stuff. Like the broken decks are part of what's fun about that game. Like putting together something that's like, this combo is stupid. And
yeah, and it's nice there's no like I can't think of a game that has, I mean, I think it's like, it's funny because it's, when you're playing cards like that, it like summons the feeling of playing a card game against someone. But so often in like any card game, it's like there's a sort of innate rubber banding where, you know, even if you have a good, like even like in traditional card games or whatever, it's like you get a really good hand when you're playing like, you know, bridge or something. And like, you're not necessarily going to get a good hand at your next round. But like in Slay the Spire, like once your hand is like good, like you have that until you die.
Yeah.
And there's no sort of like, there's no like slapping your wrist like, no, you're too powerful, you got to step it down a little bit. Which I think is a really cool feeling of just like, just steamrolling people with a good deck.
Dude, imagine this scenario, okay?
I'm ready.
A chef.
Okay.
And you're like, damn, the only thing holding me back from being a great chef, like I got all the knife skills, I got all the techniques, I know my stuff. The only thing holding me back is like, I don't have good equipment, I don't have good ingredients, I don't have access to all that stuff. And then someone's like, yo, here's all the ingredients, here's like the perfect stand mixer, here's an incredible blender, here's a, like a $8,000 sous vide machine. they put that in front of you, and then you're like, hell yeah, baby. Now, that's like the feeling that Slay the Spire gives you, right? And then, but then the feeling that like Magic the Gathering or like Runeterra or Hearthstone or whatever gives you is like, but then what if they gave those ingredients to some another, those exact things to another chef? And then we're like, okay, whoever makes the best dish wins.
It's like, what's that fucking show? Chopped.
Yeah.
It's like Chopped. Yeah,
it's like Chopped, where it's like, as soon as you introduce that like element, half of the like ceiling of like what's fun to do with these broken decks is like just not as fun anymore, because like someone else can just do that shit to you, or they can tech in a card that like directly counters your thing, and it's like there has to be a winner and a loser. Just let me fucking have fun, man. Sometimes, as a person who plays a lot of multiplayer card games. But I think like, yeah, that's the thing, is like to think about how competition, direct one-on-one competition, balance, how all that stuff factors into like the act of playing a game and like having fun on quote the journey is like, it makes all the difference. And that's like part of what makes Slay the Spire cool. DBZ Kakarot.
Oh man, tell me about Kakarot.
Okay.
What is Kakarot for the uninitiated?
So Kakarot is a Dragon Ball Z game wherein you play through the entirety of Dragon Ball Z. It's an action RPG that plays a lot like a fighter, like a 3D fighter brawler type game. It's just a lot of like, some of the fights are like 5 minutes long, 7 minutes long. You're just like duking it out. Between the fights, you're like flying around the world, talking to characters, taking side quests, beating people up, collecting orbs that upgrade your health and stats, and training new abilities, cooking food that gives you bonuses to stats. I'm just reading off the back of the box in my brain, you know. But yeah, that's Kakarot right there. Fun fact, I played DBZ Kakarot before the previous episode, but completely forgot about it.
Is that an indication of its quality, or?
It's not an indication of its quality, but I think it's like an indication of, it just doesn't, I don't know what much there is to say about it. I played like 20 hours really quickly because it was just, it's very marathonable and bingy. But one thing I like about this game, I kind of thought of this, which is, I like how it basically turns, it feels very episodic in a way that a game hasn't for me since like Walking Dead type thing, where it's like, it feels like you're playing through episodes in a way that I really like. And you're playing through like all the Dragon Ball Z saga. There's like that nostalgia factor, but there's also just the like experiencing a very huge sprawling story with like multiple arcs. And it's like, it boils down the experience of like watching the TV show or reading manga or something like that into the form of a video game, which I think adds a lot to it for me. There's, it ties together a lot of like the story arcs and the characters in a way that like I haven't experienced in a game before. And I really like that. And I think like that whole TV video game crossover is something like, there's something there that I kind of like.
There's something there.
There's something there. And I don't get that much because, I think, a lot of video games are kind of broken into an episodic structure innately, that, but they just don't acknowledge it, right? Where it's like you get from point A to point B and a cutscene triggers. And but then from point B to point C is a lot of like bullshit gameplay for like 6 hours. And then you get to the cutscene and then the next episode, the next story chunk plays. You know what I'm saying? Where it's like nothing in between is story. You're not getting any semblance of plot or anything in the normal grind of playing the game. You're only getting it in these like 3 minute cutscenes that they play for you. And Dragon Ball Z works the same way, or Kakarot works the same way, but I think inherently through the framing as episodic, it it adds a lot of really cool structure that I would like to see in video games a little bit more, you know, in a way that like nods more at how video games typically work, where you're doing a lot of bullshit in between. So for instance, in this game, they have like interludes where when you finish the Frieza saga, when you finish the Cell saga, it just puts you back in the world and is like, just do some grinding, do some side quests, cook some food, and it's like filler episodes where you're like talking to the other characters and everyone's all happy and they're just like, oh, I got girl problems, oh, I got guy problems, and you're just helping them out with just random everyday shit. But it adds a sense of pacing to the game that is really cool. And then when you go to a new saga, it's just like fight after fight after fight after fight after fight. In the Frieza saga, it was like, dude, it was just like 4 hours of straight boss fights. It's nuts. But that shit's really cool. I don't know. I dig it. And
I feel like it sounds like exactly what I wanted. That do you remember when they made that Avatar game that I think Platinum made? The Last Airbender game?
No.
Yeah, it was for like, I think it was for GameCube there or something. There is a, I feel like it
Avatar,
was Platinum.
The Last Airbender game made by up. Platinum?
Avatar, The Last Airbender, Platinum. I'm like 80% sure.
Dude, there. How could that be bad? How could that be a bad, not be a game that I have heard of?
Wasn't the Legend of Korra game, was it? Legend of Korra video game. Yeah. Legend of Korra is a 2014 third-person beat-em-up game by Platinum Games, published by Activision.
What?
Yeah, dude.
Wow.
But there was one for like, oh fuck, there was some like Last Airbender one though that was, let me see. This is great.
All right, what are you going to say? What are you trying to say about these?
Just that this sounds like what I wanted this game to be.
Yeah.
It's like I wanted it to just be a thing where I'm just literally playing through the episodes. Like that's what I wanted from this. And instead it always tries to do like, you know, some other story for it. And it's like, I don't know. I want to like go and like do all the fun stuff that I get to like see Aang do. And instead it does not happen like that.
This actually, this game reminds me of Astra's Wrath a little bit.
Yeah, it kind of looks like, I think it's the same studio, right? Like it's straight up like the studio who made
Bandai Namco,
Astra's Wrath did Kakarot.
Probably makes sense. But it's got that like just dumb fighting. You know, you're just like
stupid.
Yeah, like just fucking just punching.
Yeah, man.
Recklessly.
So the company that made Kakarot is CyberConnect 2, who also made Asura's Wrath and a lot of Naruto games.
Yeah, I think, you know, for anyone who's played the Ultimate Ninja Storm games, I think it's very similar. Realistically speaking, that's probably what it's kind of similar to, but I never really played those games.
Yeah.
I never really played those games, and I like Dragon Ball Z a lot, so it's fun. But you know what?
I mean, it looks like it gives you exactly what you want. Like that's kind of where I'm. And like we haven't had a good DBZ game that's like this. Like I don't care about any of the fighting, like dedicated fighting games. It's like this is what I want. I want to go like fishing and cooking, and then go like fuck up Frieza.
Yeah. Yep. That's what this game is. And the combat's not perfect. The world is not perfect. It's got some jank, but
like whatever, right? It's like
for
whatever.
Me, it's kind of whatever. I'm not saying it's a great game. It's like, but I'm saying when that shit goes on sale for like $10,
hey,
it's a good one. It's a great like sale game. It's like I didn't pick it up on sale. I paid full price for this shit, but this would be like the perfect sale game. That's a little tip. That's a little tip for you.
A little tip.
Speaking of which. We want to take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break.
Foreshadowing. All right. We'll talk to you in a few minutes, folks. the gamer life has its ups and downs, you know? You got your difficult moments.
I know.
You got your easy moments. There's some things that gamers do naturally, some things that we're good at, some things that come natural to us, you know? Like setting up Wi-Fi for our parents.
Oh,
or
man.
Fucking shopping for new electronics.
Yep.
But every once in a while you come across a little something new that you're like, what am I doing here? What if, and this is a new bad end segment here. What if you had like, you know, those tips and tricks, little magazines that they would put out for you when you were a kid where you're like, oh, how do I catch Mewtwo? What if you had tips for adults?
Tips with a Z.
That being said, welcome to Bad End Tips.
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 Let's talk about some tips,
Josh.
Let's talk
about some fucking tips. I mean, you brought this section up, Kyle, before
I did bring this section up.
I had no clue what you were talking about. I don't know. I'm trying to think of some tips right now.
I got a tip right now.
But I hope you got some in the hopper for me because I need some tips.
I got at least, I don't want to spend the whole rest of this episode talking about tips, but I got some good tips. All right.
All right, baby.
You ready for this first tips?
Yeah, what's your tips?
All right. So you heard of Bluetooth?
Yeah.
Doesn't Bluetooth suck?
The
answer is yes.
It does. It does.
Okay, but here's the thing, Josh. Here's the tip. Did you know that there are different versions of Bluetooth?
No.
Yeah, you didn't. So here's your the bad end tip is that Bluetooth has actually gone through a lot of different generations of specs, and a lot of stuff only works with certain generations. So you can't just buy like the $5 Bluetooth adapter on Amazon, expect your cool new Bluetooth thing to work. You need to look at and like find what Bluetooth spec your fun new thing uses and then buy the new thing. I think the most recent one is called like Bluetooth 4 CE. So I got one of these, like, I don't know if I showed you this, but I got this crazy Bose like sound gear thing. It's like one of those neck speakers. Actually, Rebecca got it for me.
Wow.
It's ridiculous and I love it. I use it all the time.
That's dope.
But it uses a special, it's like got the latest Bluetooth thing. And so I was trying to connect it to Bluetooth on my computer and it didn't work. And I was like, what the fuck? And I looked it up and it turns out there's a lot of different Bluetooth things. And now it connects to my computer with no issue because I picked a Bluetooth adapter that has the same Bluetooth like version that my thing has. And it works fine.
Hmm.
So if you're buying a cool new Bluetooth thing, this is also why some stuff doesn't work with like iPhones and stuff, or like how you find like speakers that work with game consoles, because certain Bluetooth specs don't have like transfer, some don't do voice. So research your Bluetooth before you buy your adapter.
Good tips. Good tips.
Yeah. There's a first tip.
I got a tip.
Let me hear it.
Okay. You ever make egg salad?
Is that a euphemism or?
No, like real egg salad, man.
I haven't made egg salad in a long time.
Bro, I got
the perfect, you got a good egg salad recipe?
I got a great egg salad recipe.
Okay, let me hear.
Yo, so it's so easy, dude. You literally, I like a little medium boil, you know?
Uh-huh.
You, and for that, I recommend getting one of those little egg timers. That's like you immerse it with the eggs and it shows you like on the little egg thing that you drop in how I like a little bit less than medium. So I don't like it when it's too chalky. You know what I'm saying?
You're kind of runny.
I like not runny. It's just like, it's like a clear kind of buttery. It's like a buttery, silky, smooth texture to it. It's not gooey. Uh-huh. It's still got a little firmth to it.
It's like a smooth and silky stone.
Smooth and silky
sort of vibe.
Stone in the yolk. So you get that. You hard boil about 4 eggs, or soft boil or medium boil around 4 eggs. When you bring them out, bro, this is crazy. This is my fucking perfect egg salad right here. You chop those things into like eighths. You know, I could cut them into quarters, then cut those in half. All right.
Uh-huh.
You set all your eggs aside. You put them in a bowl. You put some Dijon mustard in there, some mayo, some salt. I like a little chive, boom, 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 maybe some dill, boom, throw that in, put that over some fucking toast. It's delicious, dude. It's so easy. This is the new gamer ramen right here. Seriously, guys.
Egg salad?
So easy. Yeah, egg salad. It's
you don't
delicious.
Use any like mayonnaise or anything?
Oh, no, mayo. Yeah, mayo mustard.
Okay, yeah.
Mayo, mustard, salt.
Like, come on.
Some chive, some dill. You know what? You know, I like to get some fresh ingredients, some pepper. Get that in there.
Yeah.
Good shit.
Yep.
Great gamer snack tips.
Oh man. That's a good tip.
Tips.
Oh, I got a tips. Another tips.
I'm gonna hear a tips.
VPN tips.
Oh man,
dude,
I've been interested in doing a VPN. I feel like this is about to be like a sponsorship segment.
not really.
It's good. No, I feel like we should get sponsored and we could put it in the tips section.
Well, I'm about to prevent us from ever getting sponsored by private internet access. So check this out. This is like an anti-tips. It's like of what not to do. So you know how people are, oh, I watched the new episodes of Terrace House on Netflix Japan because they get it. Well, yesterday I wanted to watch Uncut Gems.
Yeah.
With my cousin, because I've seen it before, but he hasn't. And I went on my VPN, and it's already out on like the British versions and stuff, the British fucking Netflix and like internationally. So I went on fucking London VPN server, went to my fucking Netflix, and they were like, oh, you're sorry, you can't come, you can't watch it because it's like some
region lock
proxy thing. No, I think they just blocked the IP address coming from this VPN.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so they could just block this shit. And it's just like, oh, well, this fucking sucks. I tried like 15 different VPNs through private internet access, and none of them worked. And I'm sorry if I'm butchering all of the network language around this. I know we have programmers who listen to us who are going to be very disappointed. But hey, I'm a gamer. And you know, if you want to come at me with some tips that actually make a difference in gamer life when it comes to naming network shit, you know, let me know. But for now, this will do. But if you got any tips on how I can watch.
Wait, you don't have a tip? Gems. This is just a story of you losing?
Well, the tip is like if you get a VPN, try to make sure.
This is a request for tips.
it's an open call for tips, but also it's a tip where don't get a VPN that, you know, just try to use something.
This is sad because I really thought that you were going to say the good VPN and then say, this is how I win. Then you're going
to
say,
I mean,
the VPN
using
name.
A VPN, you can find other ways to watch Uncut Gems.
Yeah. You got to find it on the internet. It's there hanging out.
But those are dark web tips. Those are the dark web tips.
Man, I got a good tips recently.
Yeah, tip
also
me, bro.
Tech related. Here's a hot tips. So Microsoft has recently released a new version of the Edge browser that is based on the same browser that
Chromium.
Yeah, based on Chromium, which is basically the engine behind Chrome. And dude, I've switched to this new Edge browser and use it basically exclusively. And there is no difference between it and Chrome, except for it doesn't have all the crazy spying shit that Google has. And it's got all the same extensions.
How about the RAM usage?
Fine. It's actually lower than Chrome.
Hey.
Listen, man, I'm telling you, this doesn't look bad. I wouldn't bring this to tips.
It's got all my bookmarks.
I wouldn't bring this to tips if it wasn't a tips. I'm telling you I don't use Chrome anymore.
We got something good here. We got some tips.
So I'm telling all the people out there, if you want a cool browser that is functionally Chrome but not actually Google Chrome, I highly recommend Microsoft Edge, which is fucking crazy to say, but it's good, and I use it exclusively.
This
now.
Is good tips, dude. I clicked on it, immediately popped up all my Google Chrome fucking
all your bookmarks. Listen, like straight up, the extensions just work. You can go to the Chrome store and install the extensions into the Edge browser, and it works fine. I use like a bookmark extension.
You can set aside tabs.
Yeah, man. I'm telling you. This is tips.
This is cool.
This is tips.
This is a real tip right here. This is real tips. Okay.
You want to do one more tips? You want to do one more tips?
I got a couple.
All right, let me hear
tips.
Last two tips. So we'll move
tip
on.
Tip one. Tip one's a shorty. Don't tell girls about your podcast. That's a tip. For your own safety and well-being.
Okay. Is that just any girl or like your specific?
Well,
no one you're dating should know that you have a podcast yet.
Unless you really trust them. And yeah, et cetera, et cetera. Long story.
That's a deep tip. I feel like there's a story there. There's some story there, but I want to hear your next tip.
We're not going to tell that story.
What's the next tip? I got to hear it. I'm getting tip dry over here. I need
to. Oh, next tip. We got your tips getting a little dry.
Yeah.
Let me wet that tip for you, buddy. All right.
Listen, we have the explicit tag on iTunes. So, I mean, it is what it is.
Keycaps.
Oh.
Check this out.
I'm looking at them right now.
All
right,
so mechanical keyboard tips.
Yeah. Oh, mechanical keyboard tips.
Mechanical keyboards. So check it out. Let's say you got a new keyboard. You get a keyboard, but you want to juice it up a little bit. You could go on the internet. They got websites where you can purchase keycaps that make your whole keyboard look fresh. All right, and there's different types of plastics that you can get for your keycaps. Sorry, I'm looking up the material names. So you got. Most of the keyboards that you get, they use ABS keycaps. All right. Acrylon trial butadiene styrene. ABS. And it's got that kind of glossy finish to it. You know, they feel good. They're good keys. But you get a little bit of an upgrade. A lot of people prefer something called PBT. They're more durable. It's got like a matte finish to it, more expensive. But I just got some PBT keys and really digging them.
I actually don't know what I have. I'm interested now.
They're probably ABS.
I would be surprised actually.
Oh, you got a Leopold.
I got a Leopold, and I'm not actually sure.
They could be PBTs.
They might be PBT because mine aren't really glossy. Mine have a kind of matte. They sort of feel like, I say grimy in a good way. They've got like a, almost like a, feels like very fine sandpaper. They're kind of like.
Dude, my keyboard feels so good. Check this out.
Can I touch it? Can I touch it right now? Just across through the screen? You're just making that noise.
These juicy brown switches. Mm. They go down easy.
I think I got brown, actually.
I like brown. Blue is too clicky. I don't like too clicky. You can also choose between the switch types in there. I'm assuming you know the basics about the mechanical.
I mean, if you don't, here's a tip. Go to the mechanical keyboard subreddit, and they have a wiki that's incredibly comprehensive about just like getting into it, with price points, breakdowns, keycap differences. Also, because like we talked about this a long time ago, but like the kind of crazy, I don't even know what to call it, like the rise of gamer culture. You could just like go to Best Buy now and like try out different mechanical keyboard switches, which was just not a thing like 5 years ago.
Dude, tips, free tip for fucking companies. Why don't they just make keyboards that don't have gamery shit? Like, don't people understand that the gamer aesthetic, shouldn't gaming companies know by now that the gaming aesthetic is like not over, but there's a lot of people out there who don't want that shit. And yeah, it's so hard to find like a single Razer keyboard or like a single fucking Cooler Master, Rosewill, fucking Ducky that doesn't have this gamery bullshit where the letters look like fucking robotic or whatever the fuck. It's, dude, tip for y'all, change your shit.
That's like the Leopold looks like boring Enterprise, and I love it.
Yeah, man, that's what we want.
You want that boring Enterprise. I gotta do some work.
Doesn't look tacky.
You want to talk about questions? Anyway. That was the bad end tips section. Let us know if you guys need tips.
Bad end tips. If you liked what you heard, let us know. if you didn't, if it was a dud, just don't say anything and we will never
do
it
ever again.
Don't send us something saying you didn't like it. Instead, just don't say anything and we'll know. Okay. But if you do like it, let us know at badendpod@gmail.com, or you can add us on Twitter, badendpodcast. Anyway, question.
We ain't done. We ain't done. We got some questions. We got some questions from the past few episodes. All right. I'm going to bring up Oswald from our Discord, which you can join by joining our Patreon. Send us a big list of questions, but I'm only going to ask one of them because they're all basically the same question. He asked, what game from the 2010s is the WALL-E of games?
WALL-E.
I'm trying to think of a game that is... I mean, there was a WALL-E video game. That's true. I'm trying to think of a game that starts out really silent. And it's about like a robot. Rain World, man. Is Rain World not the WALL-E?
Rain World is... I feel like there's something else.
You're like in a quiet post-apocalyptic world.
These are
like
not good
game.
Lightning round questions because you really got to think like through all these games.
All right, we'll move on. We'll move on.
What game from the 2010s is the big fish of games?
I feel like
I like that movie, by the way.
Me too. I'm trying to think of, oh man, obviously Edith Finch.
Yes, Edith, dude, I was about to say Edith Finch.
Edith Finch
bro.
Is definitely.
Yeah, it. Totally Edith Finch.
All what right, next
game from the 2010s is the Iron Man of games. Iron Man.
Iron Man. No, Marvel. It was the top down Marvel battle game.
Marvel I'm just Alliance? Going through some of the easy ones. Which game is the Inglourious Basterds of games? Wolfenstein. Which game is the 300 of games?
300.
No, Assassin's Creed. Fucking the one, the Greek one.
Brotherhood.
No, I think it was like Odyssey or something like that. No.
No, Odyssey? The 300 of games is like Gladius. Yeah. Oh no, what was that? What was that crazy? Remember the Xbox One launch game where you played as like a Roman soldier?
Oh,
what was that even
it was
called?
Like Rise.
Oh, Rise. Yeah. Like Rise Son of Rome like that? Is the 300.
God.
Wait, I go and do some different questions. All right. Yeah. So this comes from Ed. Thanks, from Oswald. The Discord. Skate or Tony Hawk?
I mean, I haven't played Skate, so I'm disqualified from answering that question.
I played Tony Hawk a lot and I played some Skate, but I never had a console to play Skate on. So I was kind of forced to play Tony Hawk. So Tony Hawk, I mean, I know like that's the lame answer, but I like Tony Hawk. Tony Hawk's Underground.
I love that
shit. I still remember jumping off like a building and like into a helicopter for that scene.
It's where it all started, you know? It's where it started.
So that's where everything, that's the birth of civilization.
Ollie Ollie.
Ollie Ollie is the true base dancer. Ollie Ollie is amazing.
Yeah. Okay. I got a quick, I got a question here.
Okay. Good I got the whole list, but I believe if you want to hit Steven. A question.
Okay. For my, what are the specific threads on influential games? Like what games and what part of them have the Kentucky Route Zero influence, the Dear Esther Papers, Please, etc.? I think he's just kind of asking us to trace out a little bit more influence stuff.
Mm. All right, what do you got?
I think, you know, if you look at like a Dear Esther, that was made in Source Engine, right?
I don't know. Maybe.
I believe so. But there's like a lot of Source Engine games that like use this first person approach and have like these very talky kind of heavily lifted ideas in them. Although I feel like that thread of influence has been something that's like, it's gone in a lot of interesting directions. You know what I'm saying? Like mm-hmm. Stanley Parable, The Beginner's Guide, stuff like that. But you know, like, damn, a lot of those games were like not influential in a good way. You know, Beginner's Guide, who's done a game like that?
Nobody. No, I think no one will ever do another game like that.
Me either. Maybe.
Which is great.
Getting Over It with Bennett Foddy is like sort of
similar.
where you have this voiceover of the person who made the game, but it's totally
It's just like aesthetically similar. Yeah.
Yeah. It's totally different usage. But great fucking games that nobody has done since and probably ever will, because they're on their own. And
I have this, I have a friend, he listens to the podcast sometime, Alexander. And he has this, I don't know if it's his theory or it's just like a media theory in general, but he calls it like concentric. It's like concentric circles of discovery. So imagine that you have a circle, right? And then imagine that you have a circle that is bigger and encompasses that circle. And then you have another circle that is bigger and encompasses both those two circles. And so the idea is that basically ideas in general, or like aesthetics or whatever, kind of start in the sort of center circle, which is like kind of that's an in crowd thing. And then in the lulls between the next circle size, the aesthetic kind of like, or whatever, kind of disappears and reemerges. So what you have is kind of essentially is waves, where like an aesthetic will start and away and then kind of like filter out and become bigger and bigger over time. And so like someone is discovering, you know, the Kentucky Route Zero thing on the third ring circle through like Virginia or something. But there's other people who played Kentucky Route Zero and at the same time played like I think Jasper Burns game, like Lone Survivor is like kind of Kentucky Route Zero-ish a little bit, but like other stuff around that area. And so you have people, basically the threads of influence are not a linear spectrum necessarily. They're also, they can kind of basically reemerge after times when it seems like they've gone away. But a lot of them point back to the same thing. I actually have another example like that.
Yeah.
If you want to kind of hit you with it.
Yeah.
So I think you have, you mentioned Papers, Please, and I think there's a lot of ways that Papers, Please can kind of become a line through something. But I think specifically the sort of the mode of the game, which is a sort of a like skeuomorphic, diegetic, like kind of documentation paper manager thing. You're like literally moving papers on a desk and this kind of like split up UI. I think you can see a line from like that to something like the like interface operating system simulator things like Emily is Away or King's Way. And I think that sort of like bleeds into some of the kind of like new wave visual novel stuff like Valhalla and then whatever Valhalla's sequel are. That's like a bartending simulator where you're still, it's, you're interacting in a similar way to Papers, Please, but you're like mixing drinks instead of, you know,
Red
going
strings.
Through immigration documentation.
Club.
And then you like, and then I guess Not Tonight just came out, which I feel like has a similar, it's like centered around Brexit, but it's similar people coming to a door. You're like messing with papers and stuff. And so I think there's like a line there in that way of this sort of game, despite the fact that, you know, Papers, Please came out 10 years or so ago now. But it itself acts as the impetus for like both the operating system simulator to the like sort of, you know, visual novel plus like a, the bartender system thing to kind of other games that are more similar now. Like Not Tonight is a lot like Papers, Please, even though the stuff that came between was less like it.
This is making me think about something else that I want to add to the conversation, which is that the genre matters so much in the effect of influence, right? Where if a game is influenced by Disco Elysium, right, in the way that it goes about telling its story, which is like these very heavily written scenes, all that stuff. Inherently, if someone takes that format, they can still create something entirely new and fresh, and the influence will have been more positive, in my opinion, of Disco Elysium. Because if you're like a book, for instance, if I was influenced by another book, you know, like Haruki Murakami's Magical Realism or something like that, and then I created a different book that had some of those like ideas, but was like not completely lifting it. Just the fact that it's a book, there's like so much more space to explore, so many more of my ideas that are going to be on the page at a baseline level. And I think that stuff grants certain genres or media a little bit more. I think that's why we take influence as like a good thing at a baseline level, because in other media, like, you have so much more room to play with a format if you're lifting from it, right? Like Disco Elysium, if you're lifting from Disco Elysium as a format, you're going to have a lot more space to do your own creative thing. Whereas if you're lifting fucking Mario as your creative format, right? Like, how much more are you going to do with the platformer? We've seen it all. We haven't seen it all, actually, but you get what I'm saying, where like the space to create varies so much depending on the genre, the medium, what have you. And so right.
Like you're saying, like Disco is like different enough where it's like a new stake, like literally like a stake in the ground for what it means to be sort of like a, you know, an RPG in a lot of ways. And that feels like a new space that can be discovered in a way that Mario, which is really old, isn't sort of like a thing that has as many openings to.
Yes. It. Yeah. I think that like a heavily text-based RPG is going to allow for more creative space in its influence than something as rigid as a platformer or a first-person shooter. Typically.
I hear that.
At least that's how it ends up working out in practice. I'm not saying that that's the only influence that it can have, but the way that it typically works out is that, like, if a game is influenced by Wolfenstein or if a game is influenced by Doom, then it's going to look, you know, it's going to play pretty similarly to Doom. But if something is influenced by Disco Elysium, that could mean anything. Like, it could just be like a totally different thing where it's like set in a different world that just uses that like overarching mode of telling a story that Disco Elysium right. did. Not that another game's going to be able to do that, because it's just such like a monumental thing that that team did, but you get the idea. Anyway, that was a very rambling half answer to your question, but
you know, I got another question for you.
Yeah.
What would it take the Bad End crew to be excited about Final Fantasy 16? AKA, what is your dream Final Fantasy 16?
I got an answer.
All right.
For the game to be good.
Oh, man. What does that mean to you?
I mean, it's like, dude, it's hard for me to get hyped about games that are like not proven, you know, or that like someone else that I respect doesn't already like really fuck with, you know. It's very hard for me. I don't remember the last time it's really happened. Disco Elysium, I guess, but I mean, when he saw that trailer, it was like, okay, this is probably going to be good. This is not like anything I've ever seen before. But for a Final Fantasy game, it's like, I don't want to think about one of these games until they come out. And I want it to be good and enjoyable, because these things take a long time to be. I did play Final Fantasy 15 and beat it, but that was one of the most joyless experiences of my gaming life, I want to say, ever. it's fucking joyless, dude.
I'm trying to think of, for me, like, I don't even know, because I don't even know what I want out of that sort of game.
And it's like, I don't want to know what to want either. I want them to do something different. I want them to surprise me, you know?
It's like what gets me excited about like the next Pokemon game, and it's like, I don't know, probably don't be Pokemon. Like, do something.
Yeah. I mean, dude, but what's crazy is if you think about Final Fantasy VII, the world and like idea of that game, of like this environmentalist message in this very like kind of dystopian future corporate city and all the Shinra Corporation, all this stuff going on, like that concept is like the coolest thing that's maybe ever come out of Final Fantasy ever. Like, that's a fucking cool ass idea, man.
I think it's like the hard part
that
is like, what is
concept is so dope.
But like, what is Final Fantasy? Which could be a whole podcast in itself. But like, I don't even know what does it even mean to make it. Like, you look at Final Fantasy games and it's like, it's turn-based. Like, maybe. Is that what makes a Final Fantasy game?
I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm like, I don't
know. Character's name Sid.
Yeah. Moogles.
Yeah.
I think Final Fantasy 16.
I want that concept to hit, you know?
It's like a good, like a good big idea.
a good big idea. And I think JRPGs have gotten continually worse at that, where it's like everything is so insanely overcomplicated. I want to, like, you know, the would you kill baby Hitler if you had the chance? I would go back and kill the first JRPG that introduced like 85 layers of fucking lore. Where it was like, the crystals run on this power source, which is controlled by the Kingdom Hearts thread of lore stacking, you know?
Yeah.
Wherever that originated, I would go back and baby Hitler kill it.
Take it out.
You know?
Maybe the best Final Fantasy 16 is not a Final Fantasy 16. You know, it's just, it doesn't come out.
I want a Final Fantasy where the concept and theme and world are elevator pitchable.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the elevator pitch for any of these worlds has been particularly intriguing, probably since Final Fantasy VII or that era, I would say, to be a little bit safer.
Yeah.
You know, Final Fantasy, so medieval, a cool battle system, ace system, whatever the gambit system, that's it.
I got a
Final Fantasy 13. I don't, what the fuck was Final Fantasy 13? What is even going on in that game?
Final Fantasy 16 should have lightning. That's all I know. Bring back lightning.
She can have 13.3 or whatever.
All right, I got another question that's kind of related. It comes from Ed on the Discord. He says, when you think of your favorite games, how much does your age when you played the game affect your opinion?
Not that much.
I would say the same. I feel like stuff I liked as a kid, I still kind of like now. I can't, it's hard to think of something that, like, it's maybe eye-opening to play older stuff just to be like, wow, this is not as like dense as I thought it was. But
I think I've gotten good at recontextualizing games in my brain, where even when I look at Kingdom Hearts, which was my favorite game for a long time throughout middle school, throughout a good amount of high school, and then I stopped caring about my favorite game for a while, but have since been thinking about it more. I've recontextualized Kingdom Hearts as, like, probably not the best game, but hit me at it. But I think it captures that, like, mood and tone of that age very well. And for that, it's, like, pretty nice. And then I think of, like, Ocarina of Time, which I'm constantly asking myself the is it rose-colored glasses question.
No.
To which I think the answer is no. I think it's a good game.
I think it's also, it's easy to have that sort of, like, thinking about, like, time and place when you think about games in a way that makes it sound like your current self is somehow absolved of the same logic. And I think that you're not. Like, I think that games can still have that sort of effect now. It's just that so much shit is changing when you're a kid. It's easy to tie up, like, pieces of media to, like, oh, it was my first kiss. Oh, it was when I did this thing. Oh, it was when I went to college. Oh, like, and once you get an adult, there's, like, I mean, I would, yeah, you see it a lot of, like, the games press dad journalism where it's like, oh man, this game means a lot to me now because, you know, I played this with my kid when he was growing up. And I think the same sort of stuff happens. So I think that that's never, I think it's very rare that it's, you can talk about a game being your favorite outside of this kind of circumstance in which it became your favorite.
Right. And then, I mean, to state the obvious here, but then flip it into something that's not necessarily obvious. Middle school me would not understand Disco Elysium.
Yeah.
You know, in the same way, perhaps, that 30-year-old me would not understand Kingdom Hearts. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So the era of your life does matter. And it shows how opinion is kind of, it's based on, like, who you are, what age you are, where you are in your life, all that stuff. Because I think that Kingdom Hearts is a good game because it tells a very, like, middle school-y story to, like, middle schoolers. You know, like, that's who it's made for. And it's really fucking good at that. But
that's,
it's
okay.
Not like, yeah, and that's cool.
Next question from Ed. To wrap up Ed questions, he says, this is a great question. Are there particular genres that have large player bases despite a lack of coverage from games press? And if so, why? Ed, let me tell you right now that the most maligned genre of games in the games press is strategy games. Strategy games traditionally get so little coverage and have huge player bases. And I think it's because they're fucking hard to get into. And it really relies on having like a lot of people playing stuff over time and being good at them, be able to talk about them effectively. But I think that that's a sort of game that like a lot of, it's like, I think it's easy to forget that there was a time when first person shooters were not the dominant games genre. Like before, kind of like before Halo, like PC real-time strategy, like ruled, like dominated the scene. That's what you bought a PC for, was real-time strategy and like a lot of turn-based strategy stuff. And that those people like PC games, like built its back off that type of stuff. Like even though Doom existed, it wasn't like first person shooters were the biggest genre even then. So I think what happened is that a lot of people grew up playing strategy games, people that are like 20 years older than I am. And those people are now older and still play strategy games, and new people are finding strategy games. So there's still a lot of people that play them, but the games press skews towards just younger people in general. So like the 25-year-old who's like slinging words at Kotaku doesn't necessarily have the same insight as like a 45-year-old person who like, you know, grew up playing the first Warcraft or something. I think Josh probably has some opinions about this as well for like MOBAs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. I'm trying to readjust my thinking toward this shit, but MOBAs are still, you know, that thing where I feel like they just never have really gotten coverage. And I think it's more about like what games do get coverage. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. There was like every fucking person that I know was at the NYXL Overwatch League shit yesterday. But like nobody, like no other reporters go to like League of Legends shit.
Yeah.
You know, but League of Legends is still the biggest game besides Fortnite or whatever. I think League of Legends is even bigger than Fortnite globally, but I always remember just like the bias of games journalism sort of when I think about this stuff, because they're gonna naturally cover games that they like,
I think,
more, which is why Overwatch gets,
I think,
so
it's
much coverage.
It's almost less that. I think even Overwatch doesn't get a ton of coverage. I mean, it gets more coverage, I think, than MOBAs, but I think what it is mostly is that there's like a hierarchy, like a Maslow's hierarchy of like what a games journalist wants to talk about. And like at the very top, right below, like talking about stuff that's already known to be popular is like new stuff that looks cool. And like we exist in an era where that new stuff is so often and so frequent that you could basically just build a site off just talking about new stuff. And so the idea of covering something that's older in any way gets like pushed super far down that chart line.
That's true, but I do think Overwatch does still get a lot of coverage.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely gets more coverage, I think, than like a MOBA, but it's nothing like, I think just sites in general want to cover things that are new because that's like new shit.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not even saying it's like a huge issue anymore, because I mean, there was a time where I would get really pissed off about that whole thing, but it's like people aren't even reading esports coverage that much anyway, so what are you even gonna fucking do? Or at least sites aren't demanding it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Question?
I had one that was related, which was from Dan from the Discord. He said, did you see that article recently that the Hard Times did that was about like the world's biggest Earthbound fan decides to finally play Earthbound?
Oh yeah.
What is your Earthbound in that scenario?
Earthbound.
I was like, maybe mine's Earthbound.
Well, I mean, I'm not an Earthbound fan or fanatic or anything like that. I just have, you know, it seems cool.
I feel like mine, I'm not like an Earthbound person. It's got to be something else. It's like, what's the game that everyone expects you to have played? I don't know. Maybe mine is Earthbound too, or like as well.
It's tough because you haven't played it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, how would you know, be able to just conjure up a game that you haven't played?
But I'm trying to think of a game that I'm like a stand for that I haven't played.
This is an inherently embarrassing question.
Yeah, it's like, man, I gotta just show my ass for this question.
You have to like be like, what game are you a poser for?
Yeah. God. I bet something really obvious I'm just not even thinking about.
Yeah.
I'm sure it exists though, Dan. There's one. Maybe it's Earthbound.
What is the most challenging or hardcore thing you have ever done in a game?
Oh, from Jump Lust. Yeah. What is the most challenging or hardcore thing you've ever done in a game?
Really not much, man. I haven't done, to be honest with you, I don't really do hardcore shit in games.
I feel like,
because I'm like, when I beat the game, I just leave.
I think I like 100%ed Super Meat Boy on dark mode or whatever.
Mm.
That was pretty hardcore.
I beat Celeste in like a relatively short amount of time compared to the first couple. I played through Celeste multiple times trying to beat it as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
That was fairly hardcore. I have, let's see, I think most of that stuff would be like MOBA related, you know, just like watched videos for a specific champion and like figured out how to do a specific combo and then pull it off in game type shit.
Yeah. It's like practice.
That stuff's pretty hardcore. Yeah, like actually practicing a game.
This is actually
Guitar Hero, like learning how to tap through the Fire and Flames. It's pretty hardcore.
I have a question for you, Josh.
Yeah.
I think to think about the last question about like games not getting coverage, I was thinking recently about the distinction between a game and a sport. And I wonder if the reason something like League doesn't get covered is because it's turning more into a sport than a game. What do you think?
I agree, but I think there's still a lot of gamey stuff that should be covered.
Like what?
You know? Like season launches, I think are really cool. They basically change the game with new features every season. I mean, that stuff probably has gotten coverage, but this is more in the context of your question than like whether or not that stuff gets coverage, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe you're right. Maybe the sporty stuff is not.
Because I think of like something like Fortnite too. Like I feel like its coverage is going down. I don't see as much about Fortnite anymore, but the game is still big. Like it's not, I think it might be getting smaller, but it's still fucking huge. But it has sort of.
I thought Fortnite coverage did numbers.
I think it did. I mean, I don't know. Katie's not here. Can't ask her to verify.
She'd be like, are you crazy? It still gets the most clicks
Fortnite
of anything.
Fortnite is all we cover.
Yeah. No, but there's still a lot of gamey stuff, you know, like so gamey, so gamey.
That's true. I got another.
In the ways that the meta changes, the way that people tackle stuff. Speaking of which, basketball. Dude, I've been watching so much basketball.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you watched Uncut Gems and now you're like.
No. The season is just really good. The game is changing. The players are changing. The league is in the best place it's been since I was a kid. You know, like I haven't. It's like more fun to watch than it's ever been almost in my life. Oh, yeah.
That's interesting. I feel like there's an issue with sports that I have with video games, which is that you have to watch a sport a lot, you know?
You don't have to.
That's true. You don't have to.
If you like a team, you can just like watch, you know, a couple games every once in a while if you feel like it, or if you're at a bar and it's playing, you'd be like, oh, I like the team. Watch them.
I just had like a really weird like sensation like yesterday where I was like, maybe I want to play out of the park baseball. Like and just get real into like stats for like baseball players. I was like, that's weird.
Oh God, man. Basketball or baseball is one where it doesn't make sense if you don't watch it regularly.
Yeah.
Because it's not like a game where you watch one game and you're like, oh, that was satisfying. It's like you have to look at the arcs over the season and all that stuff. But yeah. Basketball, man, holy shit. The styles of play are so different. The metagame is changing of basketball as a sport. It's so much fun, dude. Literally, the meta is changing in front of our eyes.
They change the rules almost every year.
But this is like just how the game is played.
Is it moving away from three-pointers?
No, it's still, it's moving towards
even more towards three-pointers.
Yes. It's just a really interesting game, man. The way that it works now is that you have to have, they used to have centers that just stood in the paint, basically underneath the basket. You just throw it into them and they dunk.
Yeah.
But, so those guys were like massive, like Shaq. And then you would have guys that could like work the mid court and shoot from range. So mid range or 3-point. But now the way it works is everyone just kind of stands on the perimeter. They stand like at the 3-point arc. and then everyone just kind of driving in to the basket like at all times and like circling out. So you got some big guys who are like wrestling it out down there who are trying to get rebounds and shit. But then you got guys who are like kind of rotating it in and out. But your goal is basically to drive it into the basket, try to get a layup, try to get a lob to someone who's standing underneath the basket so that they can immediately score it. Or if you drive in for your layup and someone comes down to double team you, then you just toss it out to the 3-point line to get a 3-pointer. So you needed some guys who can like be a huge threat on the lay-in, who can drive it to the basket, kick it out, then they score a three. So there's like a heat chart of like where baskets were taken, like the top 200 most popular shots taken in basketball. And like 10 years ago, it used to be like scattered about the entire floor, basically. A lot right underneath the basket, a lot like in the mid range, and then like a little bit less at the 3-point line, as you might expect, yeah. Right? Because it's like closer to the basket, easier. But now it's like all the top 200, it's like right underneath the basket or on the 3-point arc. There's like nothing in between, which makes sense. If also now, if you think about it, it just shows how the game has evolved, but it means that your bigger guys have to be able to shoot threes and stuff like that. But yeah, anyway, that just makes it real more interesting sport to watch, because there's a lot more offense, there's a lot more scoring, there's a lot more driving, there's a lot more like techniques that people are using to sneak their way in under the basket, a lot of like expressions of it's a very expressive way of playing basketball, which is really fucking fun to watch. Highly recommend watching Luka Doncic, my new favorite player. He's not even a Laker, and I grew up a Laker fan. He's on the Dallas Mavericks. He's got a whole new style of playing basketball that I fucking love, man. He fakes. He uses a lot of fakery. So a lot of stuff that he does is really, he switches up his rhythms. He's not very strong. He's not the biggest guy on the court, but he uses a lot of rhythm changes to throw people off, and that's what gets him to the basket. It's really fucking cool. He's such a good passer. Anyway, Luka Doncic, check that guy out. Dallas Mavericks. Watch one of his games, dude. Watch that guy play. The dude owns.
Oh, God, man, sorry. I got hot and bothered about basketball.
I committed a cardinal sin and talked about sports. I talked about sports on a video game podcast. Sorry, guys.
I got three more questions for you. We'll end this podcast. Are there any crazy bucket list style gaming goals you want to achieve at some point? I want to beat all the Souls games.
I want like a man cave.
Ooh.
But that's not a man cave. You know? Like a tasteful hobby den.
Yeah. Hobby den.
Hobby space. A hobby space.
I feel like I would love to play my backlog. That's like in terms of a truly crazy goal.
That's a bad goal, man.
That's a crazy goal. This man asked for crazy goals. I'm gonna give him.
No. It's a bad goal. Not just in that it's difficult to accomplish, but why? Your backlog is full of shit.
Maybe. I've been pretty good about just hiding stuff in my library that I know I'm never gonna play.
Yeah, there's a reason why
I need like a shame collection. Like, you're never gonna play this, Kyle. Stop thinking about it. Don't even consider it in your calculus.
If we're talking about backlog as like games that are actually good that you really actually do want to play, okay, then fine. I think that's also more accomplishable.
Yeah. Semi-related. Chase asks, if you were given $10,000 to spend on nothing but stuff you don't actually need, what type of stuff would you get?
I mean, look around me.
It's an empty apartment.
All I need is food, place to rest my head, my family, friends, Kyle, Katie, the bat, and Discord.
So would you spend $10,000
on? Nothing, man.
I feel like I would...
Everything, actually.
I would buy some more modular synth modules. I'd buy a nice desk. Maybe some nice...
You have a pretty nice desk.
I do, but I want like a standing desk. One of the ones that like goes up and down.
I'd buy like some nice furniture for sure.
Last question from Dan. Which Frog Detective game is the best? Never that might actually Frog be Detective. My Earthbound game. Fuck.
What is Frog Detective?
It's the Frog Detective. It's the, I don't know how you describe it. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's that like, it was a game that was an itch. It was like Frog Detective on the Haunted Island. It's like that Grace Bruxner makes, the Green Frog. You don't know about this?
No.
Yeah, it's like true, like nice core indie game status. And there's some new one that's coming out that's like looks good and new deal. I think she got picked up by like Super Hot Presents, which is the Super Hot publishing arm. So
what?
Yeah, Super Hot started a publishing.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah,
is it like Freddy Fish or Putt Putt?
No.
Is Frog Detective
it's more like a
like
walking
that?
Simulator? It's more like imagine a walking simulator that's like a short hike, but like mysterious. But like still nice core. It's like pastel polygon stuff.
Interesting. Sounds cool.
All right, Josh, end the podcast.
Oh, God. Thank you so much for listening. I need to eat food. Thanks for listening to Madden Podcast. We're part of Super Culture Network, which is also home to Bullet Points and Savoir Faire Disco Elysium Podcast. You can reach out to us at badandpod@gmail.com. We are on Twitter at badandpodcast. Please rate us and review us on iTunes. That is insanely helpful. And we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thanks
for listening.
Love you all. Goodbye. Thank you.